Leave it, John.
She hoped to get through the mist of shock that was fogging JB's perception. He stared at her, blankness falling like a curtain over his gaze.
Leave the wound, John. Let me look at it.
How bad is it?
Hard to tell, Christy. I need to get a good look at it. It's the leg he already damaged, and those mother teeth will probably infect the wound.
The waves of attacking squirrels had slowly decreased.
No, we winning.
Seems to me those little bastards knew our weak links and concentrated on them.
Hell, Dad. All animals know when they're beat. Just some of us humans don't give up.
More than that, son. It's like they knew who was faring best against them, and somehow targeted the others.
If Doc was here, he'd give us a rambling lecture about psi powers against natural instinct and observation. How is it, Mildred?
Not so good. It was bad enough with his twisted a sprained ankle, let alone right here.
Mildred prodded with a surprising gentleness at the area ringed by the remains of the snout.
Ah! He'd get teeth out. Now. Meds left?
Not really. Those ass wipes at the redoubt took just about everything when they stripped us. We might have got the blasters back from the armory, but they weren't kind enough to leave everything else in there.
Even as Mildred spoke, her hands were restlessly searching through every pocket of her coat, opening flaps and probing into the corners of cavernous folds of material.
Huh.
With an exclamation somewhere between amazement, disgust, and relief, she came up with a sealed roll of medicated bandage and a small bottle of pills. The label revealed them to be nonspecific antibiotics. She worried about a potential allergic reaction, but had no choice. They might help fight whatever rad altered infections he could pick up from the vicious teeth that were embedded in his leg.
It's not much, but it'll have to do. The teeth will have to come out.
Leave to me.
Jack produced another of the leaf-bladed knives from within its patched hiding place. With no further comment, he set to work, prying the teeth from the wound. The two mute Sekhmen had moved into position behind the armorer and took a firm grip on him, holding him steady as he writhed and twitched in pain.
How far now?
Mac joined Ryan just away from the group. Despite his impassivity throughout the whole of their trip, he actually looked a little sick at the operation Jack was conducting.
Not far. Maybe carrying your friend will slow us down.
We still outnumber you, friend.
Okay. If you can carry him at a pretty normal pace, then just about 20 minutes more. It'll be past sunfall now, and that's always a danger. But I guess those weird things have had enough for now.
I hope so.
Dean and Christy were preparing lengths of the medicated bandage to bind the wounds, while the mute Sekhmen had JB in a firm grip. When they caught Ryan looking at him, both seemed to communicate a kind of sympathy through their eyes. Jack had almost finished his task under the watchful direction of Mildred. The bloodied remains of the snout had been sliced away, the knife paring the fur and flesh from the bone so that Jack could get a better view of how the teeth were embedded in JB's leg. The bone was almost as clean as if it had been boiled. The teeth were firm in the jaw sockets, so there was little opportunity for Jack to pry loose the bone before extracting the teeth from the wound.
Shit.
Jack grasped the bone carefully but firmly in one hand, while he began to pry the teeth loose with the other. Mildred kept a close watch on JB's leg, using a piece of bandage to wipe the dribbling blood from the localized area as the teeth moved in his flesh. With the blood wiped away, it was easier for Jack to see what he was doing.
Ah, fuck muted bastards.
The jawbone seemed to take forever to pry loose. Finally, it came away in his hand, and he tossed it over his shoulder, moving rapidly out of the way to allow Mildred to take over. Mildred didn't have much to work with, but she used another length of medicated bandage to clean around the deep puncture marks. She wiped away the dribbles of blood from the wounds. It was fortunate that the teeth had been sharp. The wounds they left were like needlepoint rather than large jagged tears. Consequently, they were actually bleeding less than she had feared. It wasn't much, but at least it was something.
Antibiotics?
Here are them pills you took out, if that's what you mean.
And that water?
Here you go.
Here, John. Drink.
Okay, let's get moving. The sooner we reach this ville, the better.
Ryan left unspoken that once there, they would work on figuring out a way of escaping. It might seem like jumping from one danger to another, but if the talk had been of a ritual chilling, then it wouldn't be likely to happen right away, and that would give them the most precious of commodities, time. Ryan took JB by the feet, and Jack moved to take him under the arms. It wasn't the best way to carry him, but it would have to do. They walked in silence. The sun had been down for nearly an hour by the time they reached the small vill. If ever there had been a vill that deserved to be described as a pest hole, then this was it. A few fires around the edges of the shacks and huts that comprised the vill were all that protected it from the encroaching dangers of nocturnal predators. Ryan couldn't see if there were any wags in the dim light, but somehow he doubted it. Mildred looked at J.B., strung out between Ryan and Jack, her heart sinking. She had been hoping to pick up some sort of supplies from the vill to improve J.B.'s condition, but from her first look, it seemed likely that she was better equipped than they were. They walked unchallenged into the heart of the vill, Mac leading the way. If there were any guards around the outskirts of the vill, Ryan didn't see them.
No one moves out or across the valley after sunfall. You've seen it in daylight. It's far worse in the dark. Never know where you are. The insiders are as wise to that as we are. They've never attacked us by night, because they wouldn't want to risk crossing the valley.
What about people from outside the valley?
Ha! They get this far, then the storms eat them up anyway. They're our friend as well as our enemy.
They continued until they were in a rough earthen square that served as the meeting point for the vill dwellers. In the dim light provided by the lamps and fires, faces appeared from the doorways of huts, keeping their distance but peering with interest at the newcomers, particularly at Dean.
Why are they staring at me like that, Christy?
Christy looked in the darkness and could see that there weren't many children in view, and those who were all seemed to have some kind of deformity springing from either rad-blasted genes or inbreeding. Faces with squat, snuffling noses dripping with mucus, hair-lipped, gap-toothed grins, slack jaws that hung open over black eyes.
I think you're probably the first child without a mutation or genetic problem they've seen for some time. This could be a good thing for us if we play it right.
When they were all in the small square, there were muttering and rustling sounds from the huts as a small crowd gathered on the fringes. Ryan and Jack lowered JB gently to the ground. He was mumbling softly and incoherently. Mildred bent over him and felt his skin and took his pulse.
He's too hot, and his pulse is racing. If we could have some water boiled in a dry, relatively clean place clear of the ground, I could clean the wounds and redress them, maybe give him more of the antibiotics. So, Mac, if you show us where we're sleeping and get me some hot water... What?
Reckon it may not be that simple, Missy. See, all outlanders or insiders are killed to appease sunup. Without sacrifice to the sun, well, the storms could get worse.
You mean to tell me that after all we did to try and save that freaking rag woman and that fat giant, after all we did to fight off those freaking squirrels, you'll sell us down the river and let us be chilled to try and stop a storm that never ceases?
Maybe Abner will make the decision under the circumstances, but it's not up to me.
Not up to you, you son of a...
It's okay, Mildred.
No, let the black woman speak.
The voice came from the edge of the clearing, and the speaker walked through the small crowd as it parted for him. He was shorter than Mac, and if anything, even more pot-bellied than the sec man. His long, thinning, and straggly hair was a dirty gray streaked with black. His long mustache and beard were similarly peppered.
Are you the Baron of this vill?
Baron? That's not a word I know for what I am. I'm the leader of this here vill, if that's what you mean. Just like my pappy before me and his pappy. We always have been, long as there's been a vill. I've heard other outlanders talk of barons, but not the insiders with the stoop uniforms.
We're outlanders, I guess. Certainly not from the redoubt.
The what?
It means the place where the insiders come from. Guess that's what they call it.
Anyways, you can call me Abner. Least I can do, all things considered. Got to be friendly now.
Why?
Hell, boy, the sun don't like it if we're not real friendly to those we chill for him.
The hut in which they were imprisoned was a round adobe structure of mud and straw. The walls were flimsy, with patches where the mud had caked dry too quickly and not been bound by the straw, which was visible in the flickering shadows cast by the old hurricane lamp that sputtered smokily in the center of the hut. JB lay near the center, a foul-smelling poultice on his wounds.
Are you sure this will work, Christy? Back when I was in med school, they weren't exactly hot for herbal medicines.
I know, but when it's all you've got. When I was young, back in Harmony, Mother Sonia taught me how to blend healing things from the most unlikely sources. It might smell like shit, and no one knows how it works, but if there aren't any meds, then it's gotta be worth a shot.
Mildred joined Christy by JB's side. In the light of the flickering lamp, his brow was dripping with sweat, matting his already soaking hair and running in rivulets down his face and neck. Mildred stroked his forehead gently, feeling the heat rise from him. He responded to the pressure of her touch by opening his eyes for a second, but not really seeing.
Mommy?
Oh, John.
Christy moved the poultice, made from rags she'd persuaded Abner to give them. The wound underneath was cleaner than before, pus and a clear discharge being drawn from it and onto the rags. A cauldron of lukewarm water, boiling when left by Mac earlier, stood to one side of the hut. Christy stripped the pus-covered rags from the outer covering of the poultice and threw them into the cauldron.
Water's next to useless. Too cool to be any good, and we've got no more rags. Time to find our own.
Without comment, Ryan, Jack, and Dean all started to strip down to their underwear. Having acquired it at the redoubt the day before, it was relatively clean, and having been under their clothing, was protected from the ravages of the dust and dirt that had assailed them in the storms. All three men took off the regulation military white T-shirts and handed them to Mildred. Jack also handed her one of his leaf-bladed knives, with which he sliced the material into strips, handing it to Christy. The material formed a new dressing on the poultice, which was replaced on JB's injuries.
Will he make it?
This gunk's working by the look of it, and he should be past the crisis of his fever before too long. If he gets through that okay, then he'll live.
I'm just wondering if we should make a break.
We've got to, Dad. There's JB to get out of here and Doc to get after. Besides, I don't want to be chilled as part of some dumbass ritual to the frigging sun.
Remember who's in charge here, boy. The only chance we have is if we work together, not pulling separately. Before you jump to conclusions, hear me out. I've got no intention of being chilled either. Trader used to say that when your time was up, you had to go down. Well, I don't feel like going down without fighting. But there's more than one way of fighting.
Sorry.
Jack put an arm around Dean's shoulders. He was only a few years older than the boy, and yet in terms of harsh experience, he was an old man.
More than one way, skin muty rabbit. Maybe not best, blast way out. Especially with no blasters.
Dean bit his lip and smiled. It was a good point. Still stunned by Abner's pronouncement, none of them had been ready for the sudden swarm of Vill-dwellers who had taken it as their cue to rush forward and disable the outlanders, moving like a mass of ants that engulfed their enemies, sheer weight of numbers pinning them to the ground and enabling the Vill-dwellers to strip them of their weapons. Or almost all of their weapons. Jack's throwing knives were so well hidden in the patches and folds of his coat that it would have taken a long and thorough search to uncover them. There hadn't been time for such a search. They'd been picked up by the swarm and rushed into the hut. Once in there, Mac and his mute Sekhmet had trained their blasters on them, while Abner had told them that he would assist them in whatever way his people could to heal JB's wounds. It was important that the son receive a whole sacrifice and not a damaged one. And so they'd been left here. At least, as Mac warned them that the outside of the hut would be guarded, he had had the grace to look embarrassed at his behavior.
Why can't we make a break for it?
Because walls have ears, for one. Especially walls that are made of mud and straw. And for two, how can we move with JB in this condition?
I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
Ryan beckoned them into the center of the hut, where they crouched around the prone armorer, as though watching him.
We're better fighters, but this is their terrain, and they're used to the weather conditions. Besides which, they outnumber us. We've got a short while to prepare something. They won't chill us in this ritual until JB's at least coherent. Thing is, what exactly do we do?
Maybe need to take Abner.
Well, they seem to follow him blindly, so yeah, if we have him, that's a powerful bargaining tool.
How far are we going to get out there with John like this? The thing he'll need most is time, and that's just what we don't have.
Then we'll buy it. I've got an idea, son. And I need to know I can rely on you totally.
Dad, you don't even have to ask.
The stars twinkled faintly through the ever-present curtain of dust. It was a lighter breeze than usual on this night, stirring motes on the surface of the tracks that comprised the roads of the small ville. Mac leaned on his blaster, his arms crossed and resting on the mouth of the long, roughly beaten barrel. It was bored smooth inside, but the outer metal was still pitted and uneven, where he hadn't bothered to shape or smooth it. The butt rested in the dirt, trigger a long way from his finger. He was supposed to be on guard, but felt tired after the long trek from the redoubt back to the ville. They'd been on a scavenger hunt, hoping for some equipment that had been left by the insiders, and hadn't bargained on walking into a firefight between the prisoners and some of the insiders. And it had been a real firefight. Mac had never really gone along with Tilly's idea that it was part of some plot to infiltrate the ville. After all, how would the insiders know that they were going to be there, let alone that they wouldn't just chill anyone they captured? He was barely able to keep his eyelids open. It had always paid to go along with Tilly, because she was insane, and might just tear your throat out if you said the wrong thing. Tilly and the giant Todd had been two of the best fighters in the ville, and now they were gone. Mac shook his head sadly. They were good to have on your side. What his people would do now worried him. It wasn't his problem, except that if not for the Outlanders, he'd be as chilled as Tilly and Todd. Even so, Abner had wanted to use them for the ritual chill. It didn't strike him as being a good move. Their skills would be good for the protection of the ville, besides which, he figured that he owed them his life. But he was just a sec man. The chief, sure, but still, just a sec man. He couldn't go against the leader. He was so occupied by his thoughts that he didn't notice the slight scuffling behind him, didn't notice first Jack and then Dean emerge from around the side of the hut, covered in dirt and mud, pieces of straw still clinging to their clothing.